I'm Snoop Dogg, and I'm giving up smoke. I know what you're thinking. Snoop, smoke is kind of your whole thing. But I'm done with it. I'm done with the coughing and my clothes smelling all funky. I'm going smokeless. Solo stove, fixed fire. They took out the smoke. Now you can have a nice blaze without any clouds ruining your day. Go smokeless. Go to solostove.com. Tell them Big Snoop Dogg sent you.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered. Here's longtime NFL and NBA announcer Ian Eagle.
Would I find this entertaining if I was sitting on the couch watching the game, or would this be a nuisance? Would this get in the way? Does it enhance the enjoyment for the viewer, or at some point are you becoming an annoyance?
Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, away we go. It is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. You can listen to this man each and every morning on Jocks FM. Also, you can catch him on ESPN. He'll be on the call this weekend for the Big 12 championship game. That is the former Alabama quarterback and Greg McElroy, kind enough to join us once again right here on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Greg, what a weekend of football. Appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, you got it, man. Happy to do it. It's a busy week, but we are chugging right along with fewer games, but more storylines than we usually have this time of year.
I got to start you off with your alma mater. Fourth and goal at the 31. We know Milroe finds Bond for the touchdown. How did you process that one? Because I still can't believe it.
I'm not sure I've processed it yet, to be honest with you. Removing the analytics side, just as like a fan, like in the moment, right? It just didn't feel at any point like we were going to win the game. I was losing my mind. I had my headset on. We're getting ready to go live. We called Georgia Tech, yeah, probably about a half hour after the game went final. And so we're getting ready to rehearse. And I'm like, push rehearsal. Give me 5 minutes. I'm going to need to rehearse. You know, I don't need to be rehearsing with stuff going on in the eye where people can see it and I'm dropping F-bombs, right? Like, I didn't want to be doing that. I was not in a happy place. I was not happy at all. Especially just how bad it was, you know. I mean, it was the 3rd and 20 before that. They could convert, and then they have the errant snap, and then they have the throw where Milroe crosses the line of scrimmage. It was about as bad as it gets. I mean, the poise could not have been lower. And then in the unlikeliest scenario possible to see him connect on, I think, what was a really accurate throw and a nice play by Bond. It was awesome. I mean, as a fan, it was awesome. From an analyst side, it was less than stellar execution. And if it's not what you want to rely on, and sometimes you just got to make a play though. And they did. And in a weekend with some pretty chaotic finishes and some pretty wild outcomes, survive in advance is the key. And they did just that.
You know, it's amazing. Cause when Bama lost back in week 2, and we all knew going into this year, right, everyone said, this is not as strong of an Alabama team as in previous years. I thought to myself, yeah, they'll suffer another loss along the way, and we've never seen a 2-loss team get into the college football playoff. With how quickly they changed things against Tennessee from halftime, and they pull it out in the with the great third quarter, I started to believe in them a little bit more. And then I thought for sure they were cooked up against Auburn with the way that game was playing on out. So watching this team throughout the year, seeing the improvement from Milroe, just what jumps out to you with this Alabama team as they're about to play for an SEC championship up against Georgia this weekend?
Well, I think they're really resilient, which is one thing that is really, and if you look kind of just across the college football world, and all the teams that are vying for the championship at the moment have all showcased an ability to just battle, whether it's Georgia, who I think has been really resilient, had bad starts against South Carolina and Auburn, and
Bowers injury too.
Yeah, Bowers has gotten hurt. Ladd McConkey's gotten hurt. They've been without Ra-Ra Thomas, who has a foot sprain. Their right tackle's been out. Their right guard's been out. I mean, they've had to deal with a lot of adversity, which is not something that Georgia has really been accustomed to the last couple of years. But here they are sitting at 12-0. Washington has found a million different ways to win, whether it be the defensive performance against Arizona State or going forward on 4th and 1 at their own 29 with 1 minute and 15 seconds left this past weekend to give themselves a chance to kick the game-winning field goal. I think Florida State has lost their quarterback. And has had some bad performances. The Clemson game, probably at the top of the list, didn't play well at all, went into a hostile environment, got a sack fumble, turned it to the house, and that was basically what won the game. I mean, Oregon has been the team that probably hasn't experienced as much adversity, but they lost because they went 0-for-3 on fourth down against Washington, who survived in that one. So I think every team's been really resilient, and I think Bama would fall suit in that as well. Things could have gone real sideways after the third game of the year against USF, but they kind of came back and they rallied around Jalen Milroe, who's gotten a lot more confident. And it's pretty obvious with how he's played. He's just gotten more confident. But no other hands full this weekend. But I think they actually match up pretty well against Georgia. Georgia's got some issues with their edges on defense against the run. And Georgia Tech ran for almost 200. Auburn went for 200 and plus against them. Alabama has a more dynamic quarterback than either of the aforementioned teams. Peyton Thorne at Auburn and Haynes King at Georgia Tech. So if they want to utilize quarterback run and really hit the edges, I mean, Missouri ran it on them too. I mean, there was a bunch of teams that have been able to run it on Georgia this year, which is not something we're used to. So I think Bama actually matches up pretty well. Probably even better than they would have even the last 2 years.
Wow. Now, let me, with that being said, Greg McElroy, out of 100%, how likely do you think it is that they hand Georgia their first loss of the season on Saturday?
I'd say it's 50-50.
Wow.
I'd say it's 50. I think a lot of it depends on Georgia's health. I mean, without Brock Bowers, I mean, they become a lot more human. And while last week they were able to rely heavily on the run game, they ran the ball really well with Kendall Milton. They ran the ball really well with Dejon Edwards. And those guys have been better since the offensive line's gotten healthier. But they're not going to be able to do that against Alabama. Alabama, that was about as bad as I've seen Bama look defensively against the run, especially in the first half against Auburn. So something tells me that they're going to get an earful this upcoming week about stopping the run. And their strength has been in their secondary. I mean, Cooley McKinstry's been up and down, but the other three guys in their secondary with Key, with Caleb Downs, the freshman, Terrion Arnold, the other corner, that's been really the strength of the team. And they've been probably the most consistent group since the Texas game. So I think Georgia has become a pass-happy offense. And I think Brock Bowers makes them very different in the event in which he can't go, or is it less than 100%, Ladd McConkey the same. Then there are some question marks about how effective Georgia will be, I think. But Georgia's elite. They're super elite. So Bama's going to have to play really well. But Bama's elite too. So if Georgia doesn't play well, they could easily lose the game. And Bama could as well if they don't play their A game as well.
When we get to the Big 12 championship game, you're going to be on the call for Oklahoma State going up against Texas. The Texas fan, they feel even if they win, they may not get in. I think the SEC champion will get in. Whoever the Big Ten champion is, it's going to be Michigan, will get in. And the Pac-12 champion will get in. Florida State, let's just say they win this weekend. Does that mean Texas is going to be squeezed out, even though there's a scenario where maybe Alabama beats Georgia and we knew that Alabama lost to Texas earlier this year?
I think for Texas to get in, they need one upset. That one upset would be Bama over Georgia. That other upset could be Louisville over Florida State. In a more crazy scenario, they need a big upset between the Iowa over Michigan. But let's be real. I don't think any of us envision that as a realistic possibility. So I think they need one upset to be in.
But let me ask you this. Do you think the committee, if it came down to Alabama and Texas, let's just say, you think the committee would put Texas in over Alabama? Because I don't think they would.
I think they will. Yeah. And it's because the committee is going to take, and they've proven this time and time again, the committee is going to take the path of least resistance. I cannot remember a single time in which the committee made a controversial decision. And people are going to say, wait, hang on a second. What about in 2017 when 11-1 Alabama got in over 11-2 Ohio State? Well, is that controversial? Ohio State lost to Purdue, and I believe they lost to Oklahoma that year as well. Yeah, it was Oklahoma that year. They had two losses against Alabama's one. Alabama has one. Ohio State has two. They're out. I can't believe they put Ohio State in over Penn State in 2016. It was pretty simple. It was cut and dry. One team had one loss. The other team had two. Yeah, the other team beat the team head-to-head, but we had two losses. Ohio State had one, put the team in with one loss. I guess the most controversial year would have been in 2014 when Ohio State was put in with one loss when measured against TCU and Baylor. But that wasn't even really that controversial. I mean, Ohio State, they didn't play either of the two. So they had a better resume, coming from a better conference, had a conference championship game that they won 59-0, and they got in. I mean, they have never done a controversial thing. What a controversial move would have been was in 2015 when Ohio State lost to Michigan State. And Michigan State was about as flawed as the day is long. They were not good. And anyone that with their own eyes could have looked at Michigan State in 2015, led by Connor Cook, and said that team is flawed and they have no business even being near the top four. But Ohio State blew it in that game to Michigan State. Michigan State won the Big Ten. Ohio State sitting there at 11-1. Everybody and their brother knew Ohio State was better than Michigan State. But guess what? Michigan State got in, and Ohio State was not even sent to the Rose Bowl. Iowa went to the Rose Bowl that year. They went to play in the Fiesta Bowl, where I believe they beat Notre Dame. So the committee's never done anything controversial at all, and they're not going to in this case either. They're going to take the path of least resistance, the path that's the most easy to justify, because they don't want to ruffle the feathers. And to be honest with you, it's never been the four best teams. I wish they would just come out and just tell us, hey, yeah, you know what? It's not the four best teams. It's the four most deserving teams.
Yeah.
It'd be more honest, which I think we can all live with at this point. Just be honest and tell us it's the four most deserving teams. And if that's the case, by all means, Alabama should be behind Texas if that's the way you want to go about it.
When this wraps up on Saturday and we wait to get the word on Sunday, what do you think the four most deserving teams are going to be with how everything plays out this weekend?
Well, I mean, if chalk flies, that means Georgia's in for sure. Michigan's in for sure. Florida State, in a favorite role, is in for sure. They're undefeated. The winner of the Pac-12 is also in. So whoever ends up winning that, whether it's Oregon or Washington, it doesn't really matter.
Who do you think wins the Pac-12, by the way?
I lean Oregon. They're playing a little better right now. I think they're a little more balanced. It's hard to pick against Kalen DeBoer in a big game, though. I mean, he's the real deal. But I lean Oregon, neutral site. It was close last time, but it was kind of a strange game last time. I mean, a couple big plays. I think Oregon's playing a little better on the defensive side, even though I do think Washington's progressed on that side. So I think Oregon wins, but I think it'll be close for sure. It'll be a game that's coming down to the wire. So if chalk flies, you have Pac-12 champ, SEC champ, meaning Georgia, Michigan, and Florida State. If Florida State loses, which is the most likely, I think, of all the teams in the championship game scenarios to lose, then that slides Texas up. If Bama beats Georgia, then Bama would be in as well. So, but you need a little chaos. Bama needs two upsets, one in which they actually control. The other, they need Florida State to lose, or they could have Texas lose to Oklahoma State as well, and they could find their way in as well. So Bama needs two upsets, Texas needs one, and it should sort itself out rather easily.
What have your thoughts been on the aftermath from the game between Michigan and Ohio State, Greg McElroy, where Ohio State fans have turned, some of them at least, on Ryan Day? Only has seven losses, but three of those losses have been to Michigan.
Three to Michigan and three in the playoff. The other was against Oregon in the regular season a couple years back.
Yeah,
so
they got blown out, yeah.
When you can name the losses off the top of your head, you're doing pretty good as a head coach, I would think. One of those losses was in a national championship game, I might add. The other was to an eventual national champion in Georgia. It's like, don't get me wrong. I understand that you need to beat your rival. I get that. But I mean, this whole, you know, he's the next John Cooper. He's 1-3. John Cooper was 2-10-1 against Michigan. I mean, it's not, he's got to lose a whole heck of a lot more games to become the next John Cooper in my eyes. I think Ryan Day is amazing. Right now, Ohio State, and here's what frustrates me about it, Zach, is that he's taken a lot of heat, and I get that. And I think that there were two mistakes that he made in the game. Both were on fourth downs where I thought maybe he could have been a little more aggressive. One was at the end of the half where he decided to kick a field goal that was missed. The other was on a 4th-and-1 near midfield that he decided to punt.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the two. If we're going to nitpick and say, yeah, you know, Ryan Day cost him maybe 6 to 10 points in the game by doing those two things. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but those are two things that I'd push back on. But what I would say is if they would have lost the same way they lost the last 2 years, I'd be a lot more frustrated if I were an Ohio State fan. But Ryan Day has made the necessary adjustments within his program to get them closer. Because if you look at how things went in 21 and 22, Michigan gashed them on the ground. They killed them by running the football. They killed them with big plays. There weren't a whole lot of big plays in this game. There were a handful, but there weren't many. And Ryan Day, I think this year, their team, especially on offense, is the least talented he's had. While they have a few good players for sure, they don't have a guaranteed first-round pick at quarterback. They do at wide receiver with Marvin Harrison. I think the tight end Stover is excellent. Egbuka is excellent. Travion Henderson's excellent. The offensive line shaky and the quarterback shaky. I mean, those are two areas where you don't want to be shaky. They tried to go to the portal. They missed. They ended up settling with a transfer, and they had to plug and play another guy. Like they tried. They just missed a couple guys. But he has improved the defense greatly. They've become a little bit more balanced offensively. I mean, all the areas where they've struggled, they've improved in. They're just not yet caught up to Michigan. But Michigan's a cut above right now. And let's reassess next year, too, when Michigan has a ton of turnover potentially, and there's buzz that Harbaugh's going to the NFL. So I think it's way too early to jump off the Ryan Day bandwagon. He's a heck of a coach. His program just a little behind the team up north right now, and I can understand Ohio State's frustration with that.
Just play along here, though, in this hypothetical game, Greg McElroy. Let's just say Day loses again next year to Michigan. That'd be four straight years. You know what the noise is now. It would only get louder. Gene Smith on his way out into retirement. You think there's any chance a year from now they lose again that they call Urban Meyer and say, maybe you want to try coaching again back at Ohio State?
I mean, I think that they would welcome Urban Meyer back probably. Yeah, it's hard to address the hypothetical. I have too much respect for Ryan Day to really even entertain it. I think he's a really good coach. And if for whatever reason he doesn't feel appreciated at Ohio State, I can think of about 100 other programs that would gladly take it. So I know it's easy to be prisoner of the moment. It's easy to fall victim to the low-hanging fruit. All of it's fair. I'm not asking people to settle. I'm not asking people to be rational. I'm not. I don't expect you to be. You're a fan. You expect the best. I'm never gonna push back on that. But at the same time, I mean, let's keep some perspective. I mean, this guy's won 90% of his games or thereabouts. It's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. Let's see what happens in the next month and a half, and reassess. Because once we get past the hurt, that's probably going to take 72 hours. Maybe it might take a week. Maybe it's going to take 2 weeks. Maybe Michigan wins the national championship and it really hurts for the next 6 to 10. I don't know. All I know is that Ryan Day was a field goal away from winning the national championship last year. And if you want to send them packing, by all means, but who are you going to get that's better?
Last thing I'll ask you before we let you run. You have the number one overall pick in the draft. You need a quarterback. Are you still Caleb Williams over Drake May? Were you never that way, or do you go with somebody else? Who do you think is the best quarterback that is going to be in play here for the draft?
I go Drake May. I need to watch the tape from this past weekend. I haven't had a chance to watch that yet. I will get to it. But I've watched probably almost every throw he's made this year. I think the processing has sped up. Caleb Williams this year relied too much on improvisation. I think you have to live within the structure of the offense to an extent at the next level. Plus I do think there are certain personality traits that I want in a quarterback, and a quarterback that has given off the impression, that he has some entitlement, or he's, or his camp is saying that he's demanding a share of ownership and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, all I know is I can just read what people have said, and that's a little bit of a turnoff to me. So I think Caleb's an elite player and an elite improviser, but I think living within the structure of the offense is something that I would have liked to have seen a little more of, knowing that he's going to transition to the next level. I think it's hard to coach when you don't know what he's going to do, and so much of it is kind of done on the fly. So I'd lean Drake May a little bit. The other guy that I've really grown to love, and I think he's got a chance to be a really good pro, is Michael Penix at Washington. I think he's got a chance to be really good. Now, he's not going to be the measurables. He's not going to have the height of what May has, or even to a lesser extent Williams. I think they're comparable in height, but Williams is just bigger, at least feels bigger when you look at him. I haven't seen Penix in person, but I think he throws it to spots and anticipates throws better than any of the aforementioned two. I think he is on another level as far as executing the throws and doing it consistently. Now, he has a really good receiving core. But if you look at the tight windows he's fitting it into, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. And then I'll tell you another guy, too. Don't sleep on Carson Beck at Georgia, man. Like, this guy's going to go flying up the draft boards here, and nobody's going to think about it. Never's going to say he's a product of his system, all such stuff. Just go look at the throws. Go watch the Tennessee game. Go look at the windows he's squeezing it into. I mean, he's got a chance to be a dude.
What about Daniels at LSU, by the way, as a pro?
I like Daniels a little bit too much like Caleb in the sense that he kind of scrambles a little bit early. I don't think he's as twitchy as Lamar Jackson. You know, like Lamar had some of those qualities, and you could see with Lamar, like he had a certain level of twitch and suddenness. Daniels has like RG3 straight line speed. You know what I mean? Like I need a guy that can have a little bit more wiggle, and that's what Lamar had. And there will be comp. He's got a really accurate throwing arm too. Down the field, really good. I think he's made himself a lot of money this year. I just don't know if I would put him into the category alongside, you know, May and Williams, who would be 1-2. Penix to me and Carson Beck would be 3-4 in whatever. I think Beck's going to skyrocket here very soon. And then 5 would probably be Daniels, but I could see all 5 coming off the board in the first round.
Greg McElroy, have a great call this weekend. Always appreciate chopping it up with you in the college football world. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks again.
There you go. Greg McElroy joining us on the Zach Gelb Show. We'll take a break. We'll come on back. We'll update you on some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We call that segment the News Brief.
Ew. Gotta get rid of this old Backstreet Boys t-shirt.
Tell me why.
Because it stinks, boys.
Tell me why.
I've washed it so many times, but the odor won't come out.
Tell me why.
No, you tell me why I can't get rid of this odor.
Have you tried Downy Rinse and Refresh? It doesn't just cover up odors. It helps remove them.
Wow, it worked, guys.
Yeah.
Downy Rinse and Refresh removes more odor in one wash than the leading value detergent in 3 washes. Find it wherever you buy laundry products.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All right, you can stream the NFL and What's the One for free, sponsored by AutoZone all season long. You can listen to every What's the One broadcast of the NFL live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open What's the One Sports or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging is available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. Let's start things off with Bill Belichick. So the Patriots lose once again. Good job, Chad Ryland. Thank you very much. Was very happy with that missed field goal. Tank, 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 tank. And now I continue to be the biggest Chicago Bears fan on the planet. Actually, Carolina Panthers fan on the planet. Even though I can't stand their owner because I want the Panthers to win. Because their pick goes to the Chicago Bears. I would like for the Pats to make the decision on who the best quarterback is on the draft. But if Greg McElroy is right, who just joined us, that he likes May over Williams, let the Bears draft Caleb Williams. Patriots get the second overall pick, and they go select Drake May. I just want whoever is the best quarterback in this draft. But anyway, Bill Belichick was asked if he still enjoys coaching the Pats. Let me predict how Bill's going to answer that. Probably didn't give a response for about 3-4 seconds and then goes, you know, I love coaching the players. I love coaching this team. And been doing it for a long time. And each and every year, love it more. Let's listen up to the hoodie.
Given how the season has gone this year, do you still enjoy the process of coaching this team to the same level as, say, previous years?
Absolutely. Yeah, every week's a challenge, and I'm excited about the challenge, the opportunity, and you know what we have to do to, you know, to win each week.
That doesn't sound all that convincing. Now, I know Bill Belichick isn't the most exuberant human being on the planet, but it almost sounds as if he was being held hostage there. Here is Rob Gronkowski. You need some animation? Well, here we go. This is the Gronk on ESPN, and he goes off on the Pats offense.
It's very frustrating, and it's very frustrating as an ex-Patriots to watch the game. It's actually one of the first times this year I've watched a complete half of a Patriots game. And let me tell you, it's as bad as what the fans have been saying. Mac Jones should have thrown about 4 picks already.
He's not wrong. It is bad. It's horrible. It's brutal. This team sucks. And that's why at the end of the season you need to clean house. Make full changes. Bill, we love you. Bill, 6-time Super Bowl champion, winning head coach, one of the greatest coaches of all time. You should want to leave. You should want to go coach a team that actually has talent because the Patriots have to build this thing for from the ground up. Let's go to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network when he gave some details on the timetable for a potential Aaron Rodgers return.
There's a chance that he practices this week. That has been his hope. Jets coaches were unclear if it's actually going to happen. I would say more likely the next week, but his return to practice at least is coming. As one source said, he just needs to bring us the doctor's note, and if he can protect himself, then he will practice and potentially will play. My understanding, Rich, is that he is targeting the December 24th game against Washington Commanders.
All righty, as much as I think this is ridiculous, like the fact that Rodgers is even in a position where all he needs is, right, that doctor note, the clearance that he can get back on the practice field, it's kind of crazy because he suffered that Achilles injury back on September 11th. But if he's saying that he's targeting the last 3 weeks of the season, so the Commanders game, this team is 4-7 right now. They play Atlanta this weekend, then the Texans and the Dolphins. I'll go on a limb here. They're already done at 4-7, but you lose another game, you're really done. And you'll probably lose at least 2 out of 3. So you're going to return to do what? Your team's not going to be in contention. We all know you're going to be the guy next year. This offensive line is absolutely horrible. So why are you returning? Why are you playing? What is there to gain? The answer, nothing. A big fat zero. It would be maybe the dumbest thing, even though it'd be one of the more impressive things I've ever seen, if Aaron Rodgers comes back this year. It'd be impressive, but there is literally no point to it. Here is Brandon Staley, angry after another bad loss.
I'm not here to talk to the fan base. I'm here to talk to my players, the locker room. I know that we give ourselves a chance to win every single week with the game plans that we have, okay? And we have done it here. You guys act like we've never played good defense. That's not the truth. That's not the truth. You act like we haven't made any improvements. There were a lot of other things that caused us to lose today. It certainly wasn't our defense. Our team lost, and I am fully responsible for it, and I take full responsibility. But we lost as a team today.
Isn't this the same thing from last week? Seriously. That was from yesterday's press conference? Yeah, I guess he doesn't make any changes. Well, wasn't that spot on, Stu, from last week? It maybe sound a little bit different. Did we just play the same clip as last week? Did someone get duped? That's the same damn thing from last week, coach. It's the same damn script each and every week. He's just not cut out. He's not an NFL head coach. So you made the playoffs and then you choked away a game last year, then you should have been in the second round. Your team's 4-7 with all this talent. You're cooked. You're done. You're finished. And the Raiders got rid of Josh McDaniels. The Panthers got rid of David Tepper. Frank Reich. A lot of Panthers fans wish they got rid of David Tepper. So you just got two coaches fired in season. Why is Staley still there? What is the benefit to having Brandon Staley there? Nothing. This guy's so lost. Here is Trevor Lawrence. Jaguars find a way to just survive against the Texans, but Trevor Lawrence was asked if he's excited for the rivalry with C.J. Stroud for years and years to come.
I want the teams in our division to be as bad as possible, so no, I'm not. That's how I see it, and the way they're playing, it's exciting. Yes, there's going to be some great matchups down the road, and C.J. is playing. He's playing lights out. It's going to be fun for years to come, hopefully. So, but no, I mean, I wouldn't prefer that. I'd prefer if, you know, the guys in our division didn't have good quarterbacks and be better for us.
We all thought that division was going to be absolutely brutal this year because it was going to be the Jaguars and everybody else. The Texans are showing you that they're more than just moving in the right direction. The Colts have the same record as the Texans, and no one's talking about Indianapolis. And remember, they lost their quarterback, Anthony Richardson, for the season. And Tennessee's not a good team. They're a bad team. But of all the bad teams, like, they're 4-7 bad team, but like they could be solid here and there. Like Will Levis, there's this excitement to watch him play. Still got Derrick Henry, who got in the end zone twice. And you got DeAndre Hopkins. That division we thought was going to be just unwatchable. It's been the farthest thing from that this year. All righty, let's go down to the Big House Field with me running around after the game and all the mayhem. You had Jason Avant, who's going to join us coming up in about 50 minutes from now. Sideline reporter from Michigan, former Wolverine wide receiver, former receiver in the NFL, the Eagles and the Chiefs. He interviewed Chris Jenkins after the game, and this is what Chris Jenkins had to say about beating Ohio State.
Chris Jenkins, senior, how does it feel to beat Ohio State?
It feels amazing. With the brothers we got, all the work we put in, It feels amazing. And there ain't no more excuses. And can't nobody say otherwise because we did that.
That's awesome. And all throughout the last few weeks, you're cheaters. You're going to get exposed. And Sherrone Moore, 3-0. But the signs point to on that one, Penn State and Ohio State, with all you whiny fans. Oh, the signs. Oh, the stealing. Oh, the cheating. Everyone was watching, and you guys still weren't good enough. Good emotion there from Chris Jenkins. We go from a winner to a man that's on the losing side of the game, Ryan Day. Crying Ryan Day. Crying Day. You lost for your third straight year up against Michigan. Let's hear from the baby petulant head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes.
What we talk about in the locker room to ourselves, but we're all disappointed. We know that what this game means to so many people, and so to come up short is certainly crushing, not only just because you invest your whole year in it. We know at Ohio State what this game means, and so there's a locker room in there. It's devastated.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, you do feel for the kids. There's no doubt about it. But we knew what the biggest flaw was for Ohio State going into the season. The quarterback's just not good enough. And Notre Dame drops what would have been an interception. Michigan doesn't drop that. Michigan's an experienced team. Michigan's been knocking on the door the last years. They beat you twice, and they've been in the college football playoff. So I look at this Ohio State team, even though they were in the playoff last year, they backed their way in. Now you don't have C.J. Stroud, and you have a lesser quarterback. Marvin Harrison Jr. was the only reason they were in the game. And quite frankly, when I was watching that from the stands in section 13, row 13, and Ann Arbor, I never thought until that last drive that Ohio State was going to win the game. And once they completed a pass, it was fumbled, they picked it up inside the 40, and said, okay, here you go. They got a chance to go win the game where they haven't led for a second. And then right after that, McCord throws the second interception. Let's listen up to the coach of Auburn, Hugh Freeze, in the Iron Bowl. Looked like he was going to have a big victory, get his seventh win of the season, and then something I've never seen before. Fourth and goal at the 31-yard line. Milroe finds Bond for the game winner. Here is Hugh Freeze on the devastating loss.
Man, it's a lot of hurt in that locker room, and it stinks. Our kids gave themselves a chance to win the Iron Bowl tonight, and that's going to stick with us for a while.
Yeah, I don't even know what you say after that one. First off, I don't know what's crazier. The fact that Milroe completed the pass or the fact that we were in a fourth and goal scenario from the 31 where the play before that, he threw an illegal forward pass because he was in front of the line of scrimmage. I'm still mystified that we were even in that scenario and then the play that happened did transpire and play on out right in front of all of us. What a wild, wild Iron Bowl. All righty, that's the news brief. It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a break. When we come on back, we will discuss the man that is the biggest joke right now in the NFL, and he's moving and grooving and making another move, and he continues to be a disaster. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio, update time first. Here it is, the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. All righty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We have now seen our third coach, or second coach, get fired this season. Josh McDaniels, Dunzo, Frank Reich, now Dunzo. It was funny. I already assumed that Ron Rivera was fired for a second, and then I'm like, oh yeah, we just know that's going to happen at the end of the season, but it hasn't happened yet. Now, let's look back at the Panthers hiring Frank Reich. I said this from the start. It was an hire. It was an underwhelming hire. It was a hire that you could say it made sense because he's an offensive-minded head coach. He is well-respected in the NFL. But just because someone thought something was a safe hire doesn't mean it was a good hire. And it blows up right in their face. With all that being said, though, it doesn't matter if Frank Reich is coaching this team or not. Doesn't. Panthers stink. The roster is just absolutely feeble. And they're going to ruin Bryce Young. Now, 6 weeks ago, if you said to me, Zach, do you think Frank Reich is back next year? I would have said yes, but that would be his final season with the Carolina Panthers. Now he's gone. Back-to-back seasons that David Tepper has fired a coach in season. The three head coaches on his watch have all been fired in season. Ron Rivera, fired in season. Matt Rhule fired in season. And then also Frank Reich fired in season. Where David Tepper messed up is there were only two coaches that should have been considered last year in terms of not bringing back Steve Wilks. You could have got Jim Harbaugh last year. Understand not bringing back Steve Wilks. You could have got Sean Payton. Understand not bringing back Steve Wilks. But once you couldn't get either of those two, or once neither of those two coaches wanted to go to you, whatever it was, hiring Frank Reich was a very vanilla and blah hire. Because Frank Reich, his last 2 years as the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts, displayed why he should not have been a head coach again in the NFL. Like, he was solid with the Colts, got dealt a bad hand with the Andrew Luck stuff, unfortunate situation. But when you habitually lose to Jacksonville in Jacksonville, when you can't beat Tennessee in a big game, what's the benefit of making sure that we need to see Frank Reich again as a head coach? What is the upside? And also, he thought Carson Wentz was going to be a savior in Indianapolis. So you bring him into Carolina. And here's the greatest irony of it all. Even though I wasn't a fan of the hire, we all know. And if David Tepper wants to refute this, go take a lie detector test. Because you will not be able to refute with a lie detector test what I'm about to say. It's the worst kept secret in football. Everybody knew it. And I don't care if you preferred Young over Stroud, Stroud over Young. It doesn't matter what I thought. Doesn't matter what you, the listener, thought. Doesn't matter what the other teams thought. Doesn't matter what the pre-draft evaluation and what we all said during the college football season, which we all, a lot of us thought Young was better than Stroud. But in Frank Reich's process, and also McCown, who got fired today, along with Deuce Daly, Frank Reich and McCown, they preferred C.J. Stroud. They did. And David Tepper, because he's a meddling owner, he found a way to convince them and demand, and that's what could happen when you own the team, to go draft Bryce Young. Now, I think Bryce Young, through his first season, has been treated unfairly. The offensive line in Carolina has been a joke. Miles Sanders should have never got a long-term deal in Carolina. And in the year of 2023, when Adam Thielen is your number one wide receiver, guess what? You're not going to be put in a position to succeed. But that problem, and it's been something that's been brewing for years with David Tepper, is he doesn't know how to allow his football people to make the football decisions. And I've used this comparison before, and I use this analogy before, and I'll say it again. Let's say I own a restaurant. Let's say I've never cooked a meal in my life. And then I go into the kitchen and tell the chef who I hired to cook the meal how to cook the meal and how to make the perfect chicken parm. And even though the chef says, nah, I wouldn't do it this way. And I go, nope, I pay you. You do what I say. That's what David Tepper does over and over and over again. And we could all go through this search. We could all talk about how the Panthers aren't a desirable job. He could probably go float a big, fat, lucrative paycheck to someone. It doesn't matter. Because eventually, David Tepper's going to be traveling down one way of the street. The coach is going to be coming the other way. And boom, they're going to collide and they're going to clash. And they're going to hit heads. Because David Tepper thinks he's a football guy. David Tepper, you own a football team. You're not a football guy. You should pay the people. I'm not saying you shouldn't be involved, but you have no patience and you constantly overtake the decision-making process. So what's the point of dishing out these big checks to people that have been in football for a long time and you don't let them actually do their job? Now, I do believe that Frank Reich in Carolina was fractured beyond repair. Because when the coach wants a certain quarterback, even if he likes Bryce Young, and now you see in year one, Bryce Young not perform well because he's in a crappy situation and C.J. Stroud thrive, and on paper, it's not like the Texans are loaded with talent, but Nick Caserio has done a good job in the draft. DeMeco Ryans has been a rock star first part of his career as a head coach. Yeah, C.J. Stroud right now looks like the better player. I fear that the Carolina Panthers, they already messed up Bryce Young. I fear that that's going to continue. So you need to bring somebody else in. And I'm not going to sit here and say no one's going to want that job. But if you are a top candidate, like if you're Johnson with the Lions, if Anarumo is a top candidate, defensive-minded coach with the Cincinnati Bengals, You're Jim Harbaugh. Why would you want to go to Carolina? Yeah, the owner will pay you a lot of money. Yeah, it's an opportunity. But he's not going to allow you to work your magic and do what you want to do because this guy is addicted to being in control, being in power, and making the decisions. And what he tells you when he interviews you is the opposite of how it plays out. He gets you to sign that contract, and it's his team, and he doesn't let you do what you signed up for. So for Frank Reich, in a crazy world, because no one likes to get fired, I bet you he's relieved today. I bet you he's saying, finally, this suffering is over. Because even though he's going to get paid a king's ransom and no one's going to be crying for Frank Reich. Frank Reich, I said this 3-4 weeks ago. At one of these press conferences when they asked him, how do you like working with David Tepper? It looked like he was being held hostage. He sounded like a robot at the podium. No one believed the crap that he was trying to sell. So now it's up for the Panthers to get it right. But even if they make a good hire, will David Tepper look himself in the mirror and will David Tepper say, I got to take a back seat? And I don't think the answer to that question is yes. And it's just a ticking clock of eventually David Tepper is going to be a ticking time bomb and he'll explode. And he is the worst owner in the NFL. Now, it used to be Daniel Snyder. Now he's out. There is no doubt about it. David Tepper is the worst owner in the NFL. I also saw Adam Schefter said on Pat McAfee that he believes 7 to 10 NFL head coaches could be fired this year. So two are already gone, McDaniels, and then also Frank Reich today. I think Bill Belichick, I don't know if he's going to get fired, but I do not think he'll be back. Sean McDermott shouldn't be back next year. So that's already four. Brandon Staley's definitely donezo. So that would be five. Everyone in the AFC North is safe. Everyone in the AFC South is safe. NFC East, Rivera will be gone. I think Daboll will be back. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to get rid of McCarthy. I know they're 8-3, but if something goes wrong in the playoffs, NFC West, I think everybody's safe. I don't know, maybe McVay floats out retirement again. And in the NFC North, Eberflus will be gone. So that right there is seven. And in the NFC South, yeah, there's a good chance maybe Dennis Allen or Todd Bowles are fired too. So just going through that, if all those hires happen, that's nine right there. And this is going to be some crazy search. But without even knowing, definitely the jobs are going to be open. And we could all assume, and you know what happens when you assume. I'll say this now, even with a young quarterback that was the number one overall pick just a year ago, I do believe the Panthers are the least attractive destination because you can't trust the owner. And it's great that the owner's going to spend all that money and give you a fat contract, salary cap sport. And the owner needs to realize, I got to allow my football people to make the football decisions. Instead, he thinks he's the football guy. And it makes no sense, too. You get rid of Frank Reich today. Why is Scott Fitterer also the GM? Just backwards with Carolina and their circus. No huddle offense next. Zach Elb Show, CBS Sports Radio.